move on with our next presentation. We have Brookfield Properties, Residential Properties, and we have Alan Norris, the CEO. Brookfield is pretty unique. It gets lumped up into the home builders, but I would say more of a better land position, which is the primary focus. And I think Alan's going to go through that with you today. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Good morning, everyone. I will give you a very brief overview and then hopefully get some Q&A towards the end of the presentation. But just to run through here. Just to give some perspective, Brookfield Residential was formed last year, March 31, 2011. It was a merger of two companies within the Brookfield group of companies, Brookfield Asset Management being the parent. And it was the residential arm of under Brookfield Office Properties plus Brookfield Homes. So we created one company, merged company, as of 14 months ago. We're roughly the sixth largest publicly traded land and housing company, but when measured by assets, we're definitely land heavy. We should be looked at most as a land company as opposed to housing. We are in the housing business, but it's not the be-all and end-all with respect to our business. We'll probably do anywhere between 1,800 to 2,500 homes on a normal year. But what our perspective is, we are the only one that is in Canada and the U.S. We have three operations in Canada and seven operations in the United States. Again, about $2.7 billion in assets and about a $1.1 billion market cap. We build homes in seven of the 10 markets, and obviously we develop land and title it in all 10 of the markets. We're the dominant player up in Western Canada, in Alberta, which is a very, very strong economic region. And we have approximately a 25-26% market share in the city of Calgary up in Alberta. So what we have is, and we believe, as Peter said, somewhat unique in that we have a fairly diverse portfolio. We've got the benefit of very strong Canadian markets where we've been in business there for over 50 years. And we have great optionality from a U.S. recovery perspective. And we are profitable. Just to give some perspective as to where the lots, we control over 100,000 lots. When you look at, this is the geographic split, roughly 55,000 or so in Canada and about 45,000 in the United States. Four markets in California, plus Denver, Austin, and Washington, D.C., and then the three markets in Canada being Calgary, Edmonton, and Toronto. From a market from an operating philosophy perspective, we do try and tend to buy land in the growth corridors in the markets where we feel there is great employment prospects and good quality of life. We're not a mass producer of homes. As I said earlier on, we will deal with the local market as to what homes we will build in that particular area. We don't focus just on starter versus move-up versus estate. In Alberta, for instance, we do very much focus on the affordable end of the market. But for the most part, we will only build on 15 to 20% of the land that we produce. We will sell the other 80 to 85% of the lots to other builders. In Canada, that tends to be, there's no nationals up there. It tends to be local and regional builders. And in the U.S., we would sell to regional and publics and anybody who's still got a pulse in the U.S. We do finance our raw land with equity. Our leverage is focused very much just on the vertical construction, both on the home building side and on the land servicing side. I'll show you our balance sheet a little bit later on in the presentation. And the only reason why our debt to cap level is a little bit higher is because the result of the merger, there was some transactional debt that went back to our parent company at the time. And we had a debt to cap of 42%, and it's now into the mid-50s just because of that transactional debt that went back as a result of the merger. But it has a 5-year bullet and a 10-year bullet, roughly half and half. And I'll touch on that a little bit later. Our advantage, there's been negligible lot development in the U.S. since 2006, and rightly so. We believe that our positioning as a land sourcer and developer puts us in a very unique position. We have the strong Canadian franchise that has generated profits for a significant length of time, and we do believe it would be great optionality within the U.S. We have our land positions intact. There were some impairments taken with the old Brookfield Homes company, you know, as everybody else who was in the land business in back in 06, 07. But we've preserved a very good positioning in most of the markets where we do business. We think that as the market starts to tighten, I mean, we're only producing, as you know, somewhere 400,000 or 500,000 units a year. The normal over the in the U.S. should be 1 million to 1.2 million if you take a look at household formation and look at obsolescence. We obviously are dealing, working our way through the excess supply. Every market is different at this point in time. We believe we're well positioned in some of the best markets from a point of view of where we are staged from a recovery point of view. And we believe that a number of groups of builders will have to come back and source lots from people like such as ourselves. I can touch on the capital side of things a little bit later. There's going to be a challenge for many of the small one-off developers who were in the business before, who were a great source of supply for the nationals. We believe that that capital is not going to be as available as it once was, and we think we're a good source of future lot supply for the many groups, whether it be regional or nationals. Our position within the Brookfield Asset Management universe allows us to see a great deal of opportunities. There's a lot of deals across our desk that we can see from our distressed situations, and we believe we have the capital resources enabled to take advantage of many of those situations as they present themselves. So really great optionality in the U.S. as the market starts to tighten. We're seeing that even as we speak. I listened to MI Homes earlier on. Our sales traffic has increased tremendously over the last few months in our U.S. markets. The backlog, even though we're not predominantly a home builder, we have over 860 homes in sales backlog at this point in time, which is up about 30 or 40% over the same time last year. So we are starting to see some resurgence. There's still a number of challenges in the U.S. economy, as we're all aware. I mean, the macro situation obviously is on the job side. The micro situation comes down to locations within each of the marketplaces. And a variety of each market has to be looked at differently. We're seeing great tightness, obviously, even in this area here in San Jose in the Bay Area, but we're seeing some tightness in other markets as well, which is leading to some removal of incentives and better pricing on the homes. Long-term fundamentals, constrained capital in the industry. Again, as I said, I mean, I think the form of financing that was used before is not going to be there before. I think it's truly going to be adjusted based on risk. The banks will not be there just funding carte blanche with respect to what they thought was vertical construction was in fact raw land for many of the nationals. And so I think you're going to see tranches of how that capital is allocated to be back into the land business. It's not going to be, that capital is not going to be available for the small players as readily as it once was. So I think we're in a unique position to be able to take advantage of being a very good provider of lots to the nationals and to the regionals as we go forward. The constraint on supply is still going to be an issue as we go forward. Greenfield development is still getting tougher and tougher, and I think you have to have a special expertise in order to bring lots on in the appropriate areas within each of the markets. And I believe our management teams have that ability. They have the history, and they have the relationships with the municipalities and the regulators in order to do that. It is not going to be, I mean, we have challenges with each of the municipalities out there from a financial perspective. Some of the infrastructure that they once would build and then charge back to the developers, to me that ability is not there. Many of them are very, very tight financially. So you're going to have a well-capitalized developer who is in a position to go in and actually front-end that and deal with it, which we believe gives us a significant competitive advantage. We are in Alberta. We are the biggest in Western Canada. That region is doing extremely well. I mean, we can chat, you know, for quite some time about oil sands and the pros and the cons, etc. But candidly, it created 100,000 jobs in a province that has 3.3 million people from a population perspective. So, and that was just last year. So it's a very positive business environment, and the prospects going forward are extremely good. And as I say, we are the dominant player in both Calgary and Edmonton, which is the two two-thirds of the population of that province. Many of the national home builders are going land light, as they would say, until they get greedy and want to get back into that market somewhere down the road. But at this point, we believe that that operating philosophy, again, bodes quite well for a company such as ourselves that that can bring lots on and be a secure source of supply for the many nationals who are out there. I mean, the nationals are going to have to figure out how they're going to source their supply chain, and we believe we can be part of that solution as the market recovers. Some of the risks from a business point of view. There's been a lot of talk, and many of you, I mean, you've seen it in the Wall Street Journal, in the New York Times, and all the Canadian newspapers, about a housing bubble in Canada. We believe that the bubble discussion is very focused, very much related to high-rise in Vancouver and high-rise in the Toronto area. We don't believe the low-rise market is affected nearly to the same extent as those two specific markets. There's no question if that bubble does burst, and I'm a believer that it is a bubble situation to a certain extent, there will be some consumer sentiment impact. There's no two ways about it. It will be in the front page of the media, and there will be some potential fallout. But it's not a market that we are in. We've steered well away from that high-rise business. And because of that, and I've been predicting this bubble for 5 years, and at some point I will be right. So so I think the low-rise, it's we've really just returned to pricing in Alberta. Probably about 9 months ago, we passed the where we were at the peak in 2007, just before it slowed down in that market. And we only slowed down, obviously, nowhere close to the same extent as the U.S. did. We slowed down for about a 15-month period. Prices dropped in, say, Alberta by about 20% and have recovered back to that point at this point. But it took a gradual time over the last 4 or 5 years to come back up to that level. Timing of the U.S. recovery, I mean, we talked about the macro situation on jobs and then the micro situation. We are seeing tightening in various markets on the land supply. We have A locations, B locations, and C locations. I would say in most markets, the A locations are in very strong demand and are fully priced. The B locations are still awaiting some price pressure from the A locations, and they will be fine. The C locations, quite honestly, should never have been built in the first place. And so we almost have to take some of those C locations out of the equation from a shadow inventory point of view, because there will be more A locations and B locations built on before anybody ever goes out to some of those outer reaches on the C locations. So that's a factor we have to look at on a market-by-market basis. Further risks, availability of credit for home buyers. We've talked about some of those challenges, and I think up to this point, I mean, there's been so much confusion in the marketplace as to what people could get, what they could not. We believe, hopefully, we get some more certainty on that. And as I say, we are starting to see that come around in each of our market areas in the U.S. In Canada, we don't really have any issues there whatsoever, that availability. We only have really 5 major banks in Canada, and so that process has been very straightforward and simple over the last number of years. Reduced availability and sources of financing for the industry. I touched on that a little bit earlier. I think the challenge there is that there will have to be different sources of capital made available to the industry in response to the risk that in each process. I mean, raw land, in my opinion, should be funded by equity. The infrastructure dollars that would be required to bring on a new community, to me there could be a gap there as to who will fill that void at this point. Land servicing, there's still a reluctance on the part of the banks to do that unless you have a very strong covenant, which we do. And then you can get bank financing, obviously, to go vertical on the housing side. So you have each of those tranches. And back in before the problems in 06, 07, there was a muddying of the credit that was out there. And I don't think the banks really fully appreciated what they were lending against. I think there'll be a much more clarity with respect to what stage of the cycle, what stage of the process that the money is being lent against. And we believe that we have the strength, both from a balance sheet and a knowledge and history point of view, that we can source that or even be a provider of some of that capital in some cases. This is just a quick slide that we threw into our corporate profile. Our book value on an adjusted basis is just over $1 billion, close to $1.1 billion. And we just wanted to, although we don't compare ourselves with the national home builders, we are only trading at this point roughly on a one-to-one basis on an adjusted book value. The adjustment is really just adding back the deferred tax loss that was written off upon the merger. So we believe, and this is in the sales pitch, we just believe that when a company that can participate in the recovery going forward through an appreciation of our tangible assets, we should be given more upside than those who are really just trading on a multiple and on earnings such as the home builders at 1.3, 1.4, 1.5 times book. The nationals, as the market recovers, if they go forward with their land light model, we believe that they will only participate mostly through absorptions and increased volumes and get that economy of scale. We will actually see an appreciation on the underlying tangible assets that we own, which we think should be reflective in our share price as we go forward. So that's our view on that. Again, part of our challenge is we're a very eclectic company. There are not many companies that do compare to us. And we are struggling because, you know, just in the last year, even just getting coverage. So it's it is a challenge with respect to that, and that's one of the biggest things we face. Just a quick look at the balance sheet, $2.7 billion in assets. As I touched on earlier, there's about the notes payable number of $480 million. That is a result of the merger transaction. That money is owed back to Brookfield Office Properties, who was our previous parent company, and that was as a result of the merger. We were about a 42% debt to cap, and then that's kicked us up a little bit higher, obviously, at this point. The half of that debt is owed in 2015, and the other half is owed in 2020. Our cash flow just from Canada alone should easily retire that debt without having any concerns whatsoever. We just released our first quarter numbers. Last year's numbers are somewhat confusing just because of the write-off of the deferred tax asset, but we made about $130 million pre-tax. There were some non-recurring items in there which will not be replaced this year, but not be representative this year, but we're on track to better all of our unit performance this year than over last year, both on lot sales and house closings in both countries. So really, just in quick summary, then we can do some quick questions, is that at this point we're making over $100 million of pre-tax, and we've only really got 3 of our 10 markets working, to be quite honest. The 7 markets in the U.S. are not at a level of performance that we would find acceptable because of the state of the U.S. housing market. All I can say is that once we see that recovery, I mean, we have great optionality because we have that strength in our Canadian operations, and we have great optionality and the patience to do the right thing from a U.S. asset point of view and take advantage of that recovery when it comes along. Do some questions.
Yeah. So I'm not too familiar with the company's like this, but what's your longer-term vision in terms of use of cash, right? So closing the use of cash and sale of debt, then what? Can you reinvest the business, start returning cash to shareholders?
Yeah, I mean, typically of any company, we can either new acquisitions, retire the corporate debt, or repatriate to shareholders. At this point in time, candidly, we're not looking at the repatriation to shareholders. We'll deal with the unsecured debt, the corporate unsecured, and we're just balancing between the opportunities on the new acquisition side and the corporate debt. For the most part, the opportunities we've found recently have been shorter-term housing plays in the U.S., which have give us the ability to make decent margins and still have the liquidity available to deal with 2015.
So as a follow-on question, how do you maintain the discipline on the reinvestment, right? It's kind of easy right now because it's cheap and at an incredible discount. It hasn't been an incredible discount. But as times sort of normalize, how do you maintain discipline to balance that reinvestment versus the shareholders?
Yeah, part of that, the Brookfield Group, I mean, it's a very disciplined group of companies, quite honestly. And so, I mean, our whole planning process is really just allocation of that capital and knowing that, yes, you're always going to justify a new investment at a 25% return versus paying down 7% debt. But you have to find that balance to make sure we're not just waiting there till 2015 and assume there's a refinancing available. So we have to start make some inroads, because I think that is a bit of an inhibitor for us as well, having that 57% debt to cap. And I think we have to start make some inroads before 15, so that we get more play on the share side, which allows us to do more, gives us more opportunity on the capital plan.
In your U.S. lot position, what percentage of those lots were actually developed as opposed to purchased after they were developed?
Yeah, most of those are all. I would say probably only 10% is developed. Is raw. Yeah. And I mean, at any point in time, I mean, in Canada, for instance, I mean, we will only develop lots. We will only have in a finished state somewhere between 9 to 15 months of lots at some degree of finishing. The rest of them will be entitled or unentitled, but in a raw state. So that's the, I mean, obviously, we don't, there's no point in finishing lots way ahead of, you know, it's just a bad use of capital.
Alan, I'll follow on to that question. I'll rephrase it a little bit. During the downturn, how much capital did you put to work to build your land position in distressed situations? So like stuff in Southern California, U.S. and Canada, how did you use your balance sheet to take advantage of when others didn't have capital and were disposing?
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously on the Brookfield Homes side from a U.S. point of view before, Peter. And we probably took a fairly good position down in Southwest Riverside, for instance, in Southern California. And we have, you know, three major communities down there which are still not pricing out on good, I mean, they're priced out well because of the distressed price we bought them at. But from a servicing and pricing point of view, we believe we're about 9 months to 12 months away from that market catching hold. And we took a pretty good position in Southwest Riverside with about 7,000 lots or whatever down there. Sorry.
I was looking at your, for example, Austin, Texas, you showed 13,000.
Yes. We have one active project in Austin, Texas at this point, and the rest of them are finishing entitlements, which should be done this year, and then really just being primed to take advantage when we feel it's the right time to launch the communities. And that market has been extremely good on the job creation side. And we're starting to see a lot of price pressure as well. So we're optimistic with respect to that.
Go ahead.
Does the Nationals go in asset light or lot light, or A, it seems to have a big chunk of profitability impact on them? And also, do you see them shortening their purchase intervals because they're buying the free more value?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, their visibility used to be out maybe 5-6 years or what. I mean, they're probably down to 2 to 3 years in many cases. Again, it depends by region. But they view their competitive advantage right now as their checkbook, so which is fine, because there are still in some markets that's the best situation to have at this point in time. How they secure that supply chain going forward, because we're not going to commit to deliver them 200 lots next year just on a hope and a prayer. They're going to have to give us some real money. So it's, we just have to find that balance, and right now it's not quite there yet, but we believe it's coming.
So would they at that point procure essentially what I would think of as a community, or are they procuring?
I would think they'd be buying, you know, 200 lots, that type of thing. Yeah.
Could you comment on in Canada what they've done to kind of squelch lending practices, maybe amortization changes? I mean, the five banks that are up there kind of, obviously, we're not buying homes at regular pace in Canada. Give some insights on why that market at the low-rise level isn't in a bubble, and then also describe that Alberta corridor where you have your land positions, kind of some of the other players in that market you're competing against.
Yeah, on the lending side, they introduced the regulatory body to try and make sure that you can only qualify on a 25-year amortization. There were some higher amortizations out there, 30 to 40 years, which to me is really just like renting, and so it was a good move as opposed to moving interest rates up to try and slow things down in those bubble situations. I mean, if they move interest rates up in isolation from the U.S., I mean, it will hammer manufacturing up in Canada. So we believe that we're going to be working in sync with the U.S. as to when the rates move in the U.S., we'll start to move in Canada. So you have to qualify even on a five-year basis. Even if you take out a variable mortgage, you still have to qualify on the basis of a five-year amp, five-year term and a 25-year amp. So I think they've done a lot of the good things to try and make sure that it's responsible lending and done the appropriate tightening. In the Alberta marketplace, we have, again, there's no real nationals there. We're the dominant player in Alberta. I would say that the starts in that market are somewhere between, you know, between 5,000 and 8,000 units a year. It's single family accounts for about 75% of the market, and multifamily for ownership is about the other 25%. There's not really a rental market at this point, but it's coming just because of the state of the economy. So it's a very positive environment. And again, strong in migration coming to the province for jobs.
Perfect. We'll move to the breakout, third floor, ambassador room, which is to the right out of the elevators down the hall.